just thinking, would anybody really want to marry me? You know, just knowing that I don't know where the end is. I mean, it could be quadriplegia. There's a likelihood of that. And I mean, I remember one thing that was so neat. Like, we were engaged, and I said, you know, the thing I'm dreading is walking down the aisle, not with you, but because I hate my limp. Like, it just reminds me, probably from the time I was 7, just like, this says to somebody, you have a disability, you're different. And Joel said to me, I love the way you walk, and I've loved it from the beginning.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Shelby Abbott, and your hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. You can find us at familylifetoday.com.
This is Family Life Today. All right, I have a question for you.
No, I'm supposed to ask you the questions.
I know, I'm the asking.
You like took over and said, you're not asking me anything.
Yep. When you get to heaven, and you know how people...
Wait.
Yeah, no, when people say, like, I can't wait to get to heaven to ask God this question, the hard question, what question would you ask God?
How does the hypostatic union work? I'm kidding. It would probably be about my brother.
What about him?
About his death.
As a five-year-old?
It's been a long, long time ago, obviously, but, you know, watching my mom and dad get divorced, my dad having affairs, alcohol— And the divorce happens, and months later, my brother dies. So,
and you're only seven,
I'm seven.
And he's 5.
Obviously, I didn't know at the time the trauma that I'm navigating, and then to add that on top of it, it isn't so much why as I'm so sad, even to this day. You know, it would have been such a beautiful thing to grow up with him, especially needed him during that time. So I think that's probably one. I'm not asking God why. I understand God's
sovereignty.
But
I think you probably did as a little boy. Why, God?
As a little boy, yeah.
Yeah, I think all of us have questions when we go through pain of, what was the purpose? Why this? And God, how could you allow this? We're going to get to those questions today. And I think our listeners, pull in close. If you're working out, get that earbud in there good, because we're going to answer and look at some of these questions. And we have Vanitha Reisner back with us today in the studio with her husband, Joel. You guys, we are excited to have you with us.
To have you both.
Yeah.
We are so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's a little better than Little Rock, isn't it, this studio?
Yeah, and the weather.
Now that you brought it up.
I mean, Little Rock's awesome, but man, you're in Orlando now, and this studio is amazing. I don't know if you know this. I don't know if we've ever said this on air. This table was made by Jim.
Our executive producer.
Really?
Isn't it amazing?
Right? If you're on YouTube, you can see it. You should watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So, Vanitha, I mean, we've had you on. You're going to have to tell your story again, because we're going to talk today about your devotional, Desperate for Hope.
Really, it's a Bible study.
Really a Bible study. But we've got Joel with you. So this is a... You know, we want to hear both sides of this story. So
okay.
Give us a little bit about, you came in here in a wheelchair.
Yes.
How does this happen?
Okay, well.
Take us back.
Take you back. Okay, well, I got polio as an infant. I was in India, 3 months old, and the vaccine had been developed, but in India, they often didn't give it at 3 months. And so I got polio, but the doctors had no idea what it was. So they gave me cortisone to lower my fever. They thought I had typhoid. And within a few days, I was completely paralyzed. And then they realized, wow, she didn't have typhoid. She had polio. But at that point, there was nothing they could do. I could not move my arms or legs. Complete quadriplegic. So they told my parents, just leave India. There's nothing we can do here. And in India, disability is a curse. And so there are, at the time, and maybe still today, very few services. I mean, people are pretty ashamed of having disability because it means you did something wrong. Your parents did something wrong. Somebody did something wrong. And so we moved from India to England and then to Canada and started having surgeries in Canada. So I had 21 operations by the time I was 13. Mm. I lived in the hospital for one time a year on my back in a body cast. I was 7 years old. So I remember 7 is a time of a lot of trauma. Like, you start to have, for me, continuous memories of what that was like. I was pretty angry at God. My parents were Christians, and they would often say, you know, God is with you. And I was like, God is not with me. I am alone in this hospital room.
You thought that as a 7-year-old.
Yes. I remember just thinking, like, I didn't want to hear anything about God. And that was for years because it just, it felt like people had really cliche answers to really hard questions. You know, trust God, it's all going to work out. Like, look at the bright side. Just things that men made no sense to me.
And you still, at that point, couldn't move?
So the weird thing about polio is after I got polio and I was a quadriplegic, probably within a few weeks or months, some of those muscles seemed to regenerate. So I wasn't able to walk, but I could move my legs. My arms are actually pretty weak and are still weaker, still very, very weak. But when I was 7 years old, after multiple surgeries, then I was able to walk. So that was pretty incredible. And, you know, a lot of miracles went through with that. I
mean, but you had been through a lot physically and emotionally.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I mean, if I'm in a cast for a week, seriously, there's part of me is like, okay, how long is this going to take? You were literally for a year?
Yeah. Yeah, it was 9 months flat on my back in a body cast. And my parents could only visit me on weekends.
Oh.
We were in a Shriners hospital, free hospital. There's a lot of people there whose families had sort of abandoned them. So the rule was parents on weekends only. And so that's all, you know, my fear was these kids in the hospital, and a lot of them were terminal. My best friend died of cancer. He was in the ward with me, and they didn't tell you anything in the hospital. So I had all these questions, and one day they cleaned off her bed, and I didn't know what happened to her, and they just wouldn't tell us. So it was just this really interesting meaning really hard existence. And so from that perspective, you know, people would come in and visit me and talk to me about God. I was like, my life is these four walls and these people. And I just couldn't believe that a loving God would have let that happen to me.
You're not alone. I mean, that's the question.
Yeah.
How did you resolve that?
Well, it was interesting when all the way through grade school, junior high, I went to church with my family because they were believers and I just showed up there.
And were you picked on at school?
Yes. So in elementary school, well, when I was seven and just learned to walk, I was—
You learned to walk at seven.
Yes. Yeah. And had gotten kindergarten, first grade, I guess around then, these kids threw stones at me as I was walking and pushed me down and called me a cripple. And I remember thinking, okay, I lived in the hospital. I could not wait to get out to be with normal kids was kind of the word I always used, is I was not living a normal life. And I still remember that. Like, I crawled over to a rock to get up, and I thought, this world is not fair. Like, it was just so gut-wrenching to me. And I did not tell my parents. Like, I didn't tell anybody for 20 years, probably.
20 years.
Because there felt like, it felt like shame, you know? Like, I am that different, and people don't like me that much. That
I'm
they
so
would,
broken.
Yeah. That my, because I walked with a pretty severe limp, and still do. And just, like, I'm ugly, I'm broken, you know, I'm never going to fit in, was sort of what I felt.
And yet, here you are, you're going to church, hearing about God.
Yeah. And really just thought, this is for other people. And then when I was 16 years old, I got involved in FCA, and my best friend and I would sit in the back and talk about boys. I mean, that was the only right reason I thought anybody should go to FCA. And then one day she went on a retreat, and she came back and said, God is real. And I just, oh, I was so upset. I remember thinking, she's going to want to talk about God. And she did. She wanted to talk about God all the time. And finally, one night, I went home and I just said, God, if you are real, show me. And I thought, okay, God, what are you going to do? Nothing happened that night. So I got up the next morning and I had a Bible from being confirmed at church, which is a little scary because I did not know Jesus, never picked up the Bible. So I ripped the cellophane off of it and opened it. And I said, okay, God, like, show me. Like, are you real? And I remember flipping first to Leviticus and going,
that's a good place to start.
Yeah, it's a great place. And I thought, I'm not sure. Yeah, this is kind of what I thought about faith. And then I asked the question. I said, why did this happen? Why did this happen to me? If you're so good and you're so loving, what did I do for this to happen? And I flipped open the Bible randomly, but with God, nothing is random, to John 9, where Jesus is talking to his disciples, and they see a man blind from birth, and they say to Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents.
You turned right to John 9.
Yes. Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? That was my question. Mm. You know, why did this happen?
Yeah.
Was this my parents? Was this me? Why are you doing this?
Because you were
this?
Told as a child, like, oh, it must be your parents. It's a curse.
Right? So I was riveted at this point. And then Jesus says, it is not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the work of God would be displayed in his life. And that blew me away because my question was, why? What had I done? And Jesus took, and that's what the disciples were asking. And in a lot of ways, that's our question to everybody. Like somebody says, I got divorced. You're thinking, what did you do? You know, like we ask that question of ourselves and of other people. Like, what did you do wrong? And yet Jesus's answer had nothing to do with who sinned or whose fault it was or the why that they were asking, but why, what was the purpose? And it was for the glory of God. And that blew me away. I still remember thinking, wow, God is real and God is listening. God has heard. God knows me. And I knelt down by the side of my bed and committed my life to Jesus. I didn't know him, but I knew he knew me.
Wow. That is powerful, isn't
it? I mean, I'm tearing up.
Me too. It's just like, whoo.
I can see you on your knees.
Yeah.
It's interesting that there's not, I mean, your friend went to the retreat and inspired you to even ask that question, but it's just you and the Word of God.
Yeah.
And and to come to the realization, you don't know God, but he knows you.
Yes.
He's seen you.
Right.
Yeah. And did it give you hope for your future?
Yes. Yes, it really did. I thought, okay, God is in my future. He's in my today. But interestingly, what I took from that was, I've had my one piece of suffering. Like, God is going to be glorified through my life.
My one thing.
And I remember, I mean, I literally remember thinking, you guys don't know. You're going to have suffering one day. I've had mine. It's in the rearview mirror. I'm good to go.
Let's move on.
And really functionally had a little bit of a prosperity gospel theology after that. Like, if you do the right stuff, God is going to come through. And for 10 years, I had success, grad school, married a classmate from there. Just thought, you know, you're faithful to God. You read the Bible. You love him. And life is going to be good.
And sounds like there's a butt coming.
Yeah. Then, I turned 30 years old and life fell apart. Mm. And that was, I knew back to when I was 16, like, wow, there is a purpose. But it surprises you. I think we all get surprised by suffering. We sort of, when we have some success in life, we just think, okay, we need to just, you know, be with God and he's going to bless us. But our definition of bless and God's definition of blessing are very different.
So what happened at 30?
30, well, I got married. I mean, I was married. My husband had an affair. So that sort of rocked my world. And didn't expect it at all. But we put our marriage back together and in marriage counseling, was very thankful for that. But then just as we had pretty much like been through counseling for 2 years, got pregnant, and our son basically died of a heart problem. And the hard part about that, which I don't know how much time we have to go into the details, but he had heart surgery at birth and he was doing great. And we went into a substitute doctor. And he thought Paul was doing so well. I don't think he really read the condition that he had. And he took him off his medicine and just said, oh, he's doing so well. I mean, he was like just thriving. And so he said, I think people over-medicate these babies. And he took him off his medicine. And 3 days later, Paul died.
Oh, Vanitha, I remember when we talked about this before, but I remember feeling the weight of when you were born, when you had polio, when you were little, you were given the wrong medication.
Yes.
And now you have a baby son who seems to be okay, he's going to be okay. And then he passes away.
Yeah. And that was, I would say, my adult crisis of faith. Because my marriage stuff, we worked on it together. But this felt like I had begged God. I mean, I still remember when Dave went with Paul in the ambulance, I got on my knees and I begged God. I mean, I said, I'll do anything. I will work in a soup kitchen. I'll teach Bible study the rest of my life. I was teaching Bible study at the time. Please don't let him die. Please don't let him die. And there was this sort of guilt feeling like, should I have seen the signs? Should I have, you know, you just, you do the what ifs you know.
And you had already had two girls, and this is your little boy.
I had one girl at that point.
Oh, okay.
Because my other daughter was born after Paul. But I remember just bargaining, begging, and just really thinking, okay, God is hearing me. We're going to go to the hospital, and it's going to be okay. And so going to the hospital and having them say, I remember saying, can I see him? I want to see him right now. And she said, I'm sorry, your son is dead. And I just could not process those words. They were just kind of ricocheting in my head. And you know, they took me back to the room where he was. And it just didn't make sense to me that I had been faithful. I'd already been through suffering. It just felt like, God, where are you? And I had been teaching women's Bible study at the time. And so I felt like I needed to be strong for everybody else. And I would just say for anybody who's listening, you know, you don't have to be strong, but I thought I needed to be because other people's faith rested on mine. So I started saying all the right stuff. You know, I wrote thank you note after thank you note Paul had just had a baby shower on Saturday and he died on Sunday. So I'm sitting here writing thank you notes, which I'm kind of like, why was I doing that? But anyway.
Without processing your grief.
Right. And I was just like, God is good. God is carrying me. But with every thank you note, after a while, it's like, I don't know where God is. And I didn't have understanding of lament or drawing near to God. And so I just felt like you just gotta buckle down. And my Bible was unopened and I felt so distant from God. And then
mad at him.
Yes, I was very angry, but I didn't even know how to tell him that. Like I did not go to God. I turned from God. I wouldn't say I turned from God. I leaned away. I didn't want to look at God. I didn't want to talk to him. But then one day in the car, I just was so, so broken. And I just said, God, help me. And the presence of God filled my car. It is the most incredible, one of the most incredible moments of my life. Similar to when I came to Christ, God was there and he was like, I am with you. I am here. I was there with Paul. Like, this is not an accident. This is not a mistake. Trust me. And it felt unbelievable that that was one of the purest moments in my life. But recognizing that God is with you is really incredible. It's better than not having pain. It's better than not having suffering.
You needed it.
Is meeting Jesus in your suffering. There's nothing like that.
And all you did was cry out.
Yes, that's all I did. And then I really discovered the language of lament, because it wasn't that that took away everything, but I knew I can trust you, God, and I can go to you with how I'm feeling. And that transformed my relationship with God.
What do you mean, the lament part?
Yeah, I think the
lament.
Being honest with him.
Realizing I don't have to say things I don't feel. I can just go to God. And that was really important because 6 years after Paul died, I was diagnosed with post-polio syndrome. So we talked about the fact that I'm in a wheelchair. So I was walking. I used to walk to work, lived in Boston, lived on the third floor. Like after all my surgeries, I lived a very normal life. But then 6 years after Paul died, diagnosed, and basically post-polio syndrome means your body is going backwards. So all the gains that I had made, they're getting undone. So I use a wheelchair more than I walk, although now I had a procedure done yesterday so I can walk, which is a huge blessing. But my arms are really weak, and, you know, I can do so much less. I mean, Joel and I have been married almost nine years next month. And, I mean, my life is dramatically different than when we first met in terms of what I could do for myself. So I see it unwinding and that. But I knew God would be faithful. And so it was after that experience with Paul, I thought, okay, God, this is hard, but we are in this together.
But then you went through a divorce.
Yeah. So then 6 years after I was diagnosed with post-polio, my ex-husband came home and said he was leaving for someone else. And that wrecked me.
I mean, if you're listening, you're like me, like, what in the world? Like, how many things can you go through?
Yeah.
And yet, even after that, how did you lift your head back up to Jesus?
Yeah. Jesus was all I had. And I mean, I realized, like, I have no hope. Like, my kids were rebelling. Both of them walked away from faith. My body was weakening. There was nothing but God. And I would say those years were the hardest years of my life. And they were the best years.
The
very best. Because I needed Jesus in a way I didn't need him. Like, I remember getting up extra early. I was homeschooling my kids for 2 years, which I really can't believe I did that because they were really angry at me, at God. But I would get up extra early and I'd open my Bible. And I just remember saying, you know, my soul clings to the dust. Mm-hmm. Revive me according to your word. That's Psalm 119:25. And God did. Like, that was the most incredible time. Like, I can say Jesus was my joy. Every other part of my life was a mess. I mean, I could barely drive my kids. They were so angry with me. I mean, like, my daughter tried to run away in the middle of the night, screaming that she hated me. I ended up pouring a full glass of ice water on my other daughter because I was so angry at her. So it was like there was anger everywhere, and I didn't know how to regulate myself or them. I felt like a failure, and yet God was so near. And I feel like that's the hope in suffering, even though our circumstances can be so hard. There is an intimacy with Jesus that I think is reserved for suffering.
That's a quote right there.
I mean, how do you explain, and Joel, you can speak into this too, because you walk into her life.
Yeah, Joel, bring us in. I mean, we've had you on before and talked to you, but bring us into this point of meeting Vanitha, and you know that she's suffered and gone through a lot. What's that been like for you guys together?
So when we met, I had been widowed for 8 years. I wanted to be married again, but I wasn't, you know, really I'd gotten to the point where I said, Lord, if you want me to stay single, I'm fine with that, but I'd really like to be married. I'm a better man when I'm married. And had met a number of people, some very fine people, but when I met Vanitha, I can't even describe it. This was so different. So the second weekend, so I was living in Knoxville, Tennessee at the time. She was in Raleigh. So I drove over the first time we met in July of 2014. And when I left that day, I said, I'd like to see you again. And she was going to a writer's conference in Charlotte, North Carolina, the following weekend. And I said, well, that's great because Charlotte's even closer than Raleigh. How about your conference ends Saturday? And then she was flying out from Charlotte on Sunday to go visit a relative. I said, I'll drive over. After the conference, we'll have dinner. We'll just talk. We'll find a church in the morning, have lunch. I'll take you to the airport. We were sitting in a coffee shop after church that Sunday morning, and somehow the topic turned to me visiting my father. So my father and I had been widowed within 6 months of each other, and we drew very close together after that, and I would go out and see him in the Midwest twice a year. I had not invited anyone since my late wife passed away to go visit my family with me. Second time that Vanitha and I had been together, I said, I'm going to go see my dad in October. Do you want to come with me? Which people who know me would tell you I'm not impulsive. It wasn't premeditated. It just came out. It was the most natural thing to say, right? Well, I think the fact that I had been through with my late wife, watching her get weaker with cancer, one of the things that that had taught me was, and I mean, it should be obvious to all of us, but your body can get weaker, but I didn't marry you for your ability to pick something up and carry it across the room. I married you for who you are.
It reminds me of outwardly we're wasting away, but inwardly we're being renewed day by day.
So I remember saying to Vanitha, I can pick up anything and carry around the house. That doesn't matter to me whether you can do that or not, but who you are inside, that doesn't change. Your body may be wasting away, but that doesn't change. In fact, it's getting better.
Vanitha, what did you think of that when he said that? What did it make you feel?
I was kind of blown away because I was thinking, would anybody really want to marry me? I mean, not that, you know, just knowing that I don't know where the end is. I mean, it could be quadriplegia. There's a likelihood of that. And, you know, there was this question of, can I even ask somebody to sign up for that? And so I remember after Joel and I were dating, and I kept saying, you know, are you sure?
Are you sure?
And finally, Joel was like, I'm sure. Like, stop asking me that. Uh-huh. And I mean, I remember one thing that was so neat. Like, we were engaged, and I said, you know, the thing I'm dreading is walking down the aisle, not with you, but because I hate my limp. Like, it just reminds me, probably from the time I was 7, just like, this says to somebody, you have a disability, you're different. And Joel said to me, I love the way you walk, and I've loved it from the beginning. And I mean, that just says it all, you know?
Yes.
And I can tell, just in my limited knowledge of Joel, he's not just sputing words out.
No.
He means what he says.
And isn't that marriage? We all come in with a limp.
Yeah.
You
yes.
know,
yeah.
we right. all have a limp. Some are visible and some aren't. But the longer that Dave and I have been married, I can say, like,
she can say, I'm a big limper.
I can say, I love your limp. It's part of who you are, it's part of what is endearing to me. Or we can look at our spouse and say, but you're so broken. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the word, we choose to see each other the way God created us, with the potential. Even toward the end of our lives, as we're getting older, like, man, God has more ahead. But we haven't even gotten to, some of you are listening, you're thinking, I've got some hard questions for Vanitha.
And they're all in your Bible study.
Yes.
Seriously, we haven't even talked about any of them yet. We got to go there, because I'm sitting here amazed. And I know our listeners are, that you are a believer.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have every reason to say, I'm out. I am out. And many people have. Mm. And they didn't endure half of what you endured. And they're just like, if this is what life with God is like, I'm out. And you are singing his praises.
Mm. And you as a couple, you're inspiring. Mm. The way you serve Joel and look out for what Vanitha needs. Vanitha, knowing that you contribute so much to Joel and to your marriage, it's beautiful.
Oh. Yeah, but the listener's like, how do I get to where you are?
Yeah.
And that's tomorrow. You got to tune in, because we're going to go there tomorrow.
Ugh, a cliffhanger. Well, you know what? I know Vanitha and her story, so you will not want to miss any of what she has to say tomorrow when she and Joel come back. I'm Shelby Abbott, and you've been listening to Dave and Ann Wilson with Vanitha and Joel Reisner on Family Life Today. Vanitha has written a book called Desperate for Hope, Questions We Ask God in Suffering, Loss, and Longing. You ever been there? I definitely have, and Vanitha is so good at speaking into these kinds of questions and topics. Her book is a Bible study along with video access, so it gets you both of those. It's practical wisdom for growth, gaining confidence in the Lord, strength in Him, and a deeper connection with God. So you can get your copy of Vanitha's book by going online right now to familylifetoday.com, or you can find it in the show notes as well. Or you can give us a call at 800-358-6329. Again, that number is 800, F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. And one of the things that I am so proud of by being a staff member with Family Life is the Weekend to Remember Marriage Getaway. It has helped so many couples over so many years to reunite, connect with one another under the banner of the gospel in ways that have been practically miraculous. Really, they are. God does incredible things at the Weekend to Remember Getaway. So I wanted to let you know right now that you can enjoy 3 days of romance and reconnection with your spouse at the Weekend to Remember Marriage Getaway, because it's 40% off now through Thursday, April 11th. There's no promo code needed. You can get the link in the show notes at familylifetoday.com to find out more, or you can go to weekendtoremember.com. We actually still have 20 Weekend to Remember Getaways coming up between now and mid-June. So don't let any summer plans keep you from prioritizing your marriage right now. You can get ahead of the busyness and make your plans for just the two of you. Again, you can find the link in the show notes at familylifetoday.com. Now, tomorrow, I'm excited to say that Vanitha and Joel Reisner are coming back, and they're going to talk about being mad at God. And also, at the same time, the importance of expressing your emotions to God, which is not something we typically think of when we think about talking with God. But Vanitha and Joel Reisner will be here with David Ann Wilson to talk about just that. We hope you'll join us. On behalf of David Ann Wilson, I'm Shelby Abbott. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.